Spacey is a global co-working and conference community. We've had our fingers on the pulse of co-working since 2012, and we've connected thousands of operators, both in person and online. On the Juicy Podcast, we talk with the people making it happen day in and day out. Let's get to it. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Juicy Podcast. I have a total treat for us this morning. I have Kat Johnson with me. Hi, Kat.
Hey, Liz.
How are you? As a human, not your business, you personally.
As a human, I'm good. I'm feeling really grateful. Got a lot going on, but a friend was in town for a couple of days. It made me hit pause on all of the busyness that's happening and just like be present and hang out and yeah, feeling super grateful.
Oh, I love that. I love that. And how is business?
Business is wild. So a week ago tomorrow, I launched the book. And it has been insane. Like, this is the first time ever I've felt like I can't keep up with the nice things people are saying, like on social media. I'm so worried that I'm forgetting something, or there's been a ton of activity, so much love. So many good vibes. Yeah, it's been really fun.
Okay, so those that don't know that have clearly been under a rock because it was all over social media last week, what is your name of the book and how do people get it?
The book is The Daily Co, and you can get it on my website, katjohnson.co/dailyco. But if you just go to katjohnson.co, you can find it. And I just got the Kindle files back. One of the problems we had is that people couldn't get it internationally because shipping's just ridiculous. Mm-hmm. But I just got the Kindle file back. So hopefully by the time people hear this, the Kindle will be available for people international. And it's kind of it's a book you want to hold in your hands, but this will be a good stopgap until we figure out how to get that international shipping thing figured out.
Yeah. And what inspired you to put this together?
Well, I write a ton, like on the daily. So taking all the things I've learned, started with my first great home co-working space at Next Space that really showed me what a co-working community could be. And as co-working's grown into such a massive industry, it's really important to me that we retain those roots of heart, collaboration, connection, community, like the things that really separate co-working from office rental. Mm-hmm. And I thought this would be a good way to do it. And rather than writing a book that people had to slog through, I wanted to give them little snips every day. So it's a daily reader where a sentence or two, sometimes I expand a little bit, but it's just like little nuggets to keep you aligned with what we're really doing in co-working.
I love that. And what are we really doing in co-working?
Oh, honestly, this is my big grand vision. This is my why. I feel like when we get activated as individuals, where we're doing our best work, living in our potential, aligned with our purpose, our vision, our values, working within the right vibe, something magical happens and our potential for transformation is pretty vast. And I see in co-working spaces, when it's done well, that you hold a space for people to come together and get actualized, right? Become your best self, do your vision, do your purpose, live in your vision. And it's a really lofty goal for co-working. And I know some people fall off. They're like, I just want to sell offices. But the big picture here is I feel like a world of activated people would transform our world. I just feel like when we're living in our potential and our vision, that something really magical happens. And I've seen co-working spaces that are able to do that at scale. And it's just a profoundly cool thing.
I love it. I love it. That is awesome. And then I was curious because you and I had touched base a few times on your process on the book. And I'd love to hear, like, what was the hardest part about getting a book out? And what was the most rewarding part about getting a book out?
So there are definitely like fits and starts where, you know, I'd be really into it and then not touch it for a few days or weeks or something. But to be honest, the very hardest thing was the imposter syndrome that came up once I had finished it. Mm. Once I had finished it and edited it and proofread and it was ready to go. And I was like, this probably sucks. Mm. What am I doing? Who am I to have, you know, all the imposter stuff that comes up. So that was the trickiest thing. And even when I had the book printed, I had two boxes of books. I like brought them home and set it in the corner and didn't look at it for like 3 days. It was intimidating. Wow. So I think that's been the most challenging thing, is kind of stepping into this new level, this new kind of dimension of having not just put out a book, but like I have enough to say that I wanted to put it in a book and get it out into the world. That's been a little intimidating, but the most rewarding thing has been the response. Like people are just, it's so cool to watch people posting themselves holding the book, and orders just keep coming in and people are saying amazing things. I'm getting really nice emails, and it feels like there were a couple of times in this process near the end where I felt like I was just swept up in the momentum of it. Like the book was mm-hmm. happening with mm-hmm. or without me, you know, it was like every door just kind of swinging open, which as we've talked about so many times over the years, like that's when we know we're in the right place, right? When things are just flowing. And it was that so much so that it was like, oh God, a little intimidating, but it's been really rewarding to see people dig it and really, really feel into what I shared.
And one of the things that I know we both practice is a morning routine. And one of the things I really like about this is that it's 366 days of co-working community. So there's something every single day for you to read about co-working and community. And so for me, I think having a morning routine is just like mandatory and an absolute game changer. Do you mind sharing with our audience kind of like what your morning routine looks like?
Yeah, I'd love to. I live for my morning routine. I get up so early so I can have like a nice, long, slow morning and then still be working by like 8:30. So I get up, I come downstairs, put on my tea water, kind of get the room ready, get the lights on that I like. Then I sit down and there are 4 books that I read from. Now 5 with the Daily Co. It's funny to read what I wrote. I'm like, let's see what I had to say today. So it's some spiritual books, some recovery books, just like keeping my mind right. A little book that my sister gave me, a little Pema Chodron quotes and thoughts that I love reading. So I read those and just kind of reflect on the day. I pull open the blinds. I can see the mountains from here and just kind of slow down and align with who I am and who I want to be in the world and get tuned in with, you know, with the universe, with spirit, whatever you want to call it. And then I meditate for a bit, and I've been doing that for years, but I found myself kind of almost phoning it in a little bit. I'd be like, close my eyes and just really thinking about work, but mm-hmm. calling it meditation. But recently in the last few weeks, I've been kind of recommitted to really giving that the space that it deserves. And of course, you know, it makes such a big difference. Yeah. So then I do that. And then I sit there and I scroll and post social things and just enjoy my tea and do whatever. And then usually around 7:30 or 8, start getting moving, and usually at the computer by 8:30. And then in the morning, I go over to Kiln, which is my home co-working space, and hang out and do my thing there.
I love it. I love it. Yeah. I started having a morning routine super consistently when I got sober almost 15 years ago. And it has been such a game changer. And I think, you know, to me, the worst morning in the world is a morning where you oversleep and you have to rush around. Like people that do that every day, like you guys are missing out. There is a whole different way to like peacefully and purposely slide into the day. And I wouldn't change it for anything. I absolutely get up early so I can enjoy that.
Yep, agreed completely. And it was last week with like the book launch and stuff, I was really excited and there was so much to do. I'd wake up and there were all these orders. So a couple days in a row, I came and just like went right to the computer. Even like while my tea was steeping, I'm like, that is not like, I'm so impatient, but it's like, I don't have to like spring right to the thing. But with that morning routine, if I miss it for like a day, sometimes, you know, you're traveling or things are crazy or whatever, I can get away with it for a day. But like by the second day, by the third day, I'm like super squirrely. I'm feeling it. Everything feels too much. Like it's a huge part of my mental wellness of just like slowing it way down, because I have a very busy brain.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I definitely got out of the habit in Salt Lake City because I was just, I felt like I needed the sleep more than I needed the morning routine. And I was probably wrong.
I mean, there's a crazy thing out there that says meditating for 20 minutes is the equivalent of 3 hours of sleep. Wow. So sometimes when you're just like super sleep deprived, you can do a little meditation and it helps.
Yeah. So just for those that don't know, you do more than write books. You have the lab, you have convos. Can you tell us a little bit about some of the things that Kat Johnson Co. produces?
I would love to. It's been so cool to go from, you know, working in a record store for 20 years to this whole ecosystem of things that all revolve around and serve co-working and cool space operators. So last Friday, we had a co-working convo, and this is a monthly virtual event for co-working space operators, free, wide open. We keep it super informal. We just like to show up. It's a huge Zoom call. Everybody just jumps into the conversation in the chat. We have all-star guests with everyone. Like, I really try to get people who I know can speak specifically to a topic. We've been doing that since October of 2019.
Wow.
So right, pre-pandemic, it was crazy timing. And then during the pandemic, the numbers just got so high of attendees. Like there were several months in a row that like 400 people registered because we were all just at home. But now we've kind of recalibrated. We get about 125 to 150 registrants per. Yeah, it's huge. And it's just space operators from all over the place. I love when people come to a convo for the first time. They're like, what is this? Because it's all their people and everyone's sharing their best tips. It's like co-working at its finest. We're not sitting there like being cagey with each other. We're like giving it all away so that we can all be better for it. So that's co-working convos. And the lab is really my primary project. It's the marketing club for indie co-working spaces, which is, you know, the tagline, the descriptor, but it's really an amazing community that's been around during the pandemic since July of 2020. It's a little pandemic project that has grown into, I think we're creeping up on 80 co-working spaces in there. So we have all the things like workshops, resource library. We also have work sprints. On Wednesday, we get together two times for work sprints. It's a support community for co-working space operators. Like, it's hard to put into words exactly how amazing that community is, but it's like a co-working community with it for co-working community builders.
And so is that your ideal client for the lab? I just want to make sure that people understand who should be looking at joining the lab.
Yeah, you know what? So for years, I was serving co-working space operators, and I still do that. That's what co-working convos is designed around. Like, I'm all in on the co-working world. And the issue was really forced about a year. I don't know. When was that? You were privy to this, like a year and a half ago, where something happened and it became clear that my ideal client, the people who really are picking up what I'm laying down, are the indie operators. So we kind of crunched some numbers. There are a lot between 1 and 3 spaces, but there are a good chunk between 4 and 10 spaces. We have some people in the indie community that even have up to like 20 spaces, which it's an interesting thing. Like, what is an indie? And so
that's my next question.
So much of it is mindset, right? There are places that have one location, but they don't behave like an indie operator at all. They behave, you know, it's something different. There are brands that have scaled to 10, 15, 20 locations that still very much give each space the autonomy, and they're hyper-focused on community. And so I've realized people self-select whether they're an indie operator. It's not a matter of how many spaces you have. It's a mindset around serving. But so I realized about a year and a half ago, and I just started owning that, like in my bios and things like that, like elevating indie co-working spaces everywhere. And this is like a great brand and marketing lesson. It's sometimes it makes you nervous to think of niching too small because you think people will fall away. But the exact opposite was true. It's like when I kind of stepped into that place of I am for the indie co-working spaces, people are like, great, that's me, instead of like, I'm for everyone. And it's just a valuable lesson for co-working space operators. Like, don't be afraid, especially as we're growing, like 5 times as many spaces by the end of the decade, if the projections are true. It's like, don't be afraid to be for someone, like to really own who it is you're for, because I think people will get lost in a sea of spaces if they don't have a really strong differentiator.
Yeah, you know what? That's a very good point. I was talking to a large operator yesterday, and he was looking at going really niche on something. And we were talking about the value of niching down, you know, because it really does help people identify and figure out, you know, where they belong. And it's just like, there's so many flavors of co-working. I'm always saying, you know, test out a few and see where you fit. Because what happens, I think, with a lot of people, especially in larger cities, is they just pick one co-working space, they go to it, they don't have a great experience, and they're like, oh, I don't like co-working. No, you didn't like that co-working space. There's a lot more out there. Go keep trying them until you find your where you belong and where you feel welcome and where you feel the community that you're looking for. Because maybe I want to sit in an open space and talk to strangers, and that gives other people absolute hives. They don't want anyone to talk to them ever. Like, so, you know, it just, you've got to go figure out where your community is and where you fit. And the way to do that is test a bunch out.
Juicy is heading to Manchester. Who said the capital should have all the fun? We had to share the love with the north of England. Join us in the UK on June 6th and 7th for Juicy Manchester. We'll have a 2-day program where the vibrant cityscape meets co-working innovation, surrounded by Manchester's iconic red brick buildings. Did you know that Manchester is not only famed for its culture and rich music scene, but its symbol for the past 250 years is the worker bee, representing a city that was built from the ground by its hardworking people? How many will you be able to spot? We invite you to join our community for a real-time co-working and hospitality experience in the heart of this dynamic city. Manchester, with its pioneering spirit and thriving co-working scene, is the perfect backdrop for Juicy UK. For more information on Juicy Manchester, head to uk.juicy.co. And don't forget, Juicy UK returns to London in October 2042. Speakers and more to come. See you there.
Yeah, it's so true. And on the side of the operator, it's like you want to be the only choice for your perfect fit members. That when people come in, they're like, oh, this is what I've been looking for. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember when I was in a town and I was touring around different co-working spaces. I had a friend I was dragging around with me, and I had been hyping up co-working for so long. And each space, we went to a few spaces, and I was like, this isn't quite what I've been talking about. Like, it just didn't have that vibe. And then we walked into a space and I was like, this is it.
Yeah.
This is what I've been talking about. And for me, that's what I wanted. But somebody else, they might want the office rental experience where they have a place, they go, they shut the door. That's their thing. I would argue that I do not believe at all that that's where we're going collectively. I think as younger people move in, that's going to fall off of just like straight up office rental. I think that people want more belonging, connection, especially on the heels of the pandemic where we were all forced into isolation and everyone's like, this is horrible. Like, I don't want this at all. I know this is really close to your heart and your work with addressing the loneliness epidemic and things, but I just think that collectively we're moving into a place where we want more connection and people, even if it's like lightweight conversations. Like, I've been in co-working spaces that I literally could not get anything done because there were so many conversations. And it's like, that's kind of one extreme. The other extreme is nothing at all. And it's like, I kind of like something in the middle where I have my dedicated desk. I can go like do heads down, but then I can pop out into the common space and chit chat, hang out. But you know, that's what works for me. It may not be what works for other people.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting in my first co-working space that I ran, it was kind of just a long open co-working space. And on one side, we had a like lower ceiling and we played White Noise in that section. And then there was the middle that was just kind of the, you know, the white noise had died out a little bit. And then we had this really like two-story high space where we put in all these really cool paper lanterns and we played music down there. And it was upbeat music. And that's where all of the extroverts hung out, was down there. We're all down there talking, listening to the music, taking our calls, doing our things. And all of the introverts are over like hugged up to the next, to the white noise.
The white noise.
Talking to each other. And then what was funny was there was a whole group of people that kind of met in the middle. And when they needed to, they would go closer to the white noise. And when they heard a conversation that they wanted to be part of, they would walk over and be like, well, the mattress I bought and loved was.
That, I feel like that's where I would be hanging out, like my Libra self. Like, I want it all. I feel like having zones is the key to a great space. Like, sometimes you are like, if I'm in the library, like, I am heads down, please don't bother me. This is the thing. And other times you're like working in the cafe and kind of answering emails, but chatting with everybody. And yeah, I think having different areas that it's pretty clear what happens in those areas is a really good thing.
Yeah. You know who's done a fantastic job of that is Sarah Travers with Bill Jacobson. He started the whole thing of the neighborhoods. They have neighborhoods. And some neighborhoods you can talk in and some neighborhoods you can. And there's a neighborhood for phone calls. And I love that concept of there's different neighborhoods within the space. Because, yeah, like we're all working differently now. We're on a lot more calls, which is why phone booths have just gone through the roof. And, you know, there's a lot more calls because we weren't traveling as much, but we're actually, the travel is catching up. We're getting to pre-pandemic levels now. So that's going to change a little bit, I think, as travel changes.
I was going to ask you how they at Work Bar kind of designate that with the neighborhoods. I know, like on tours, signage, whatever, because it's like you have to get those norms in place, right? So you don't get the dude on the Zoom call on speaker, you know?
Yeah, it's basically really good signage and then them, you know, teaching people where the different zones are when they come in.
Yep.
But yeah, and I think a lot of it becomes pretty obvious, you know, for those that don't have really obvious signage. You kind of, you know, you can get in the wrong place and you start talking and you're just going to get shot the look by everybody in there. And
then you just,
oh, okay, not in so here, true. Got it.
Yeah, so true.
So what do you think some of the other like keys to success in co-working are? As far as like definitely design, I think the other thing is, you know, having the right community manager and giving them the bandwidth to be a community manager and not spend all their, one of the things I've noticed in some of the co-working spaces that I frequent in Austin is the community managers are now just tied to their computers, like doing reports and getting on Slack channels and doing stuff. And they're not able to go pay attention to the community because they have all of these things they have to be doing for somebody else, somewhere else.
Oh, this is such a wormhole, as we could do like a week long thing on this. I think the biggest mistake you can make is to treat someone like a receptionist, to pop them at the desk and give them a bunch of computer to-dos.
But on the other hand, it's a huge mistake to not greet people. And I see that all the time too. There is one co-working space I observed that the community managers, plural, were both sitting at a tiny desk right in the doorway and people would walk in and they wouldn't even look up.
Yeah. I mean, and this is, we're getting into the territory of like being a community manager is so crazy. And I have never run a co-working space, but I've seen a lot of them. Mm-hmm. And it's like multitasking like crazy, right? Like the coffee and the tours and building the community and getting the bird out that just flew in, like all just like the crazy nonstop things. So yeah, it's like you have to be there. There has to be a welcome presence. But I think the best thing a community manager can do, and they have to be empowered to do this, is to actually be part of the community. Mm-hmm. Like you cannot build community from outside of the circle or from above the circle. Like it's not something, it's not a recipe that you do. It's like you have to be willing to plop yourself in there, talk about what you're working on, or, you know, it's like, it's such a fine balance. And one of the things with hospitality, which I love, I think it's spot on to move into this, like hospitality versus office rental and real estate. But one of the things is when you go to a hotel, you're only there for a couple of nights, right? So you want to be treated with like, yes, Miss Elam, you know, like that kind of thing. In a co-working space, like I go to my space every day, every month, year after year after year. It's like after you kind of get past that initial thing, you don't want to be treated like a hotel guest.
Right.
Like, it's your home away from home. I want to walk in and, you know, have conversations with people and know like what's going on and not start from zero every day. Like, hello, good morning. You know, right. It's like, no. That's not what we're doing here. And I think that that's the one flaw I see in the parallel between co-working and hospitality. And if people are just trying to court travelers, you know, people who are just going to be in their town for a few days, the hospitality thing works. But being hyper-focused on that kind of high-brow hospitality, I think is a mistake for your members who are there year after year. Because, like, I love the hospitality touches, like the snacks, the nice coffee, the thing, like, you know, this whole really nice experience. It's lovely, but you have to balance it with a humanness and a friendliness. And
literally.
Yeah, that's...
And... You know, once again, I'll plug the book, like Unreasonable Hospitality. If you haven't read it, it's a must read. It's so great. And, you know, I think the thing is part of the reason I wanted to move co-working out of real estate and identifying with real estate and into hospitality was I really started thinking about, you know, is real estate a major part of a major component in our cake? Yes. You have to have real estate. It's one of the ingredients. But the main thing we're producing is hospitality. Like we are interacting with other humans and trying to make the majority of their working day better. And so to me, like it's just so critical that we refocus ourselves on the humans and making sure that we're paying attention to them. And no, you can't know every person's name, but you can sure try. And, you know, just little things make such a difference, like looking somebody in the eye and saying, good morning. That can like change a person's entire trajectory of their day. Like you don't know what happened to them that morning. You don't know if their, you know, dog puked on the carpet, enter my life. And, you know, you stepped in it and then you stubbed your toe because you moved it too fast. And then, you know, whatever, like, you know, you just don't know what baggage people are walking in with. And it's just so critical that we be open and welcoming and acknowledging of other human beings. It's literally that simple. And it literally can be the difference between life and death. If you look at the suicide rates, if you look at the loneliness epidemic, it is absolutely critical that every single one of us picks this up and says, I'm going to make a difference in somebody's life every single day. And it can also just be a smile. You just smile, just acknowledge that there's a human there. And I think COVID set us back in a really horrific way in terms of connection, and that we have to triple that connection on the other side of it to make up for that time.
Liz, I couldn't agree more to all of that. The foundation, like the real estate foundation, you have to get your lease, you have to get your agreements, you have to do all that stuff. That's not my lane. Like there are people who are really good at that, you know, not my thing. Co-working is what gets built on top of that. And I see a lot of brands and people get the foundational piece in place. And then they're like, now what?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because that community, the connection, everything you're just talking about, giving a sense of belonging, making people's day better. There's not a formula you follow, right? It's like every day is different. Our mutual friend, Craig, he talks about how they have found that having like a 2 to 3 minute conversation with someone makes them rate their day like fantastic, like a great day at the co-working space. Just by having like one just little drop-in conversation. Yes. It doesn't have to be like a game-changing experience every day. It's just like walking in the doors, do people feel better?
Yeah. And I mean, I will say like I've got a whole bunch of people who used to be in my co-working space link that are still in my life. And I absolutely love the nostalgia that they speak about Link. They are just like, it's never been recreated. I've never had anything else like that. And we were, I mean, if anything, overly intentional. Like, we greeted every single person every single day. Now, we were a smaller operation, but like, it's possible. And yeah, it makes just such a huge difference. Well, I know you and I could talk about this for, like, again, a week, but we don't have a week. And I keep my podcast pretty short, about 30 minutes. So we're almost to the end of our time. And just for you, Kat Johnson, I have pulled out new closing fun question.
Okay.
So this is it. You have 1 year to take care of one thing on your bucket list. What is that thing? And what are you going to do? I'm not going to hold you to it, but like, let's dream for a minute.
Wow. I think a lot about bucket lists. Meeting Magic Johnson is on my bucket list. So I might get a little more focused on that. God, Liz, that's such a hard one. And honestly, there's not a location or something I want to do. I don't know. I've realized over the years, like, my joys are pretty simple, right? Like, I'm going to have to get back to you on that one, but we'll call it Magic Johnson thing right now.
Okay. Well, that's good, because this podcast will go out to a bunch of people and hopefully somebody has a connection to Magic Johnson, and it's going to be like, hey, Kat, you need to come down to Florida because Magic Johnson's going to be at this event and we can go.
Yeah, that's what I want to do, because I want to give him a huge hug and say thank you so much, because he's been my idol for so, so long, because he played with so much joy. Mm-hmm. You know, he like brought so much of himself to the game, to the sport. I still feel like he's the standout model of like just being here, just being grateful, just being present, just trying to be of service and stay in gratitude, you know? So I guess it's like, I'm at peace.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah. No, I'm totally good. I mean, I don't want to die tomorrow, but if I do, yeah, I'm good.
Yep. So it's an amazing place to be.
Clean.
Yep. Good.
Yeah. It's a good place to be.
Yeah.
Well, Kat, thank you so much for all you do for our industry and for those indie folks. And y'all, if you haven't checked out the lab or the Daily Co or
bringing your joy and your full self to your work. So yeah, I would give him a huge hug. I'm sure he'd be like, okay, kid. I had a life-size stand-up of Magic who's like, he was like 6'7". He is like 6'7" in my room for years.
I love that.
I mean, it's real. I'm not that. It's real. That's maybe my only bucket list item. So yeah,
I love it. Oh, well, I've got literally, this probably won't surprise you, probably 35 things on my bucket list.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah, and they are mainly around travel. Also,
I'm sure.
Won't surprise anybody.
Yeah. I mean, there are things like my partner wants to go to the Greek islands. I'm like, yeah, that would be lovely. We've been talking about that for years and years and years and years. Like,
well, I'm going in September.
All that stuff sounds great. Of course you are. All that stuff sounds great. But like, if I died, I guess this is the thing. Like, if I died tomorrow, I've been doing so much work around like convos.
Sorry, I blanked.
I love it. I love it.
All of those things on katjohnson.co. And Kat, you know, I love you and adore you and can't wait till I see you next.
I love you too, Liz. And thanks for all that you do for all of us for all the many years. My co-working aha was at a Juicy many years ago. I was like, oh.
Tell me about it.
Okay. It was the first one I went to in 2015. I had been writing about co-working for a while. I was up in the top bleacher row. I think it was it in Berkeley?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like up at the top row with my, you know, reporter's notebook, just like taking notes. And well, the question was asked, like, who thinks co-working is about office rental and or like dividing up space? And there wasn't, you know, nobody raised their hands. And it's like, who thinks co-working is about something more? And the room kind of burst into applause. And I was like, oh, it's that something more that like resonated so deeply with me of like, mm-hmm. It's just what we've been talking about, connection, humanness, belonging.
I love that so much. And one of the things I'm going to do in my lifetime is gather the juicy stories, because there's so many stories like that that I never hear. And then I'll hear about them later. Like, people met at Juicy and then they got together and formed a co-working company, and that was that. And like, there's so many amazing juicy stories. We do have a juicy wedding and a juicy baby, so that's one I can take off. But like, there's so many stories that I don't get to hear. So by the way, if you have a juicy story for me and you want to tell it, hit me up, because I'm going to start recording them and put them all together, maybe in a book.
There you go. I can tell you how to do it. Now I know. Now I know how to take a really long Google Doc and turn it into a book.
All right. Awesome. Thank you, Kat.
Thank you, Liz. Yeah. Talk to you soon. Bye, friend.
Thank you for tuning into the Juicy Podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to like and follow us for more juicy content. You can stay connected with us on social media by following us at Juicy Global. We're looking forward to having you join us next time for more insightful discussions. Until then, keep exploring the co-working world with the Juicy Podcast. Ciao.